Hi, today is Pi Day, March 14, 2015, or 3.14.15.92654. If we happen to be talking at 9:26 a.m., with 54 seconds after it, but not quite, at least not in my time zone. John is past that, I'm before it. We're a couple of time zones apart. But anyway, happy Pi Day, March 14th, 2015. None of us will live to see the next big Pi Day, so...
Yeah, but as I was sharing with you before the podcast, it seems like the math geeks have become very organized in the last few years, and about once every year we get some interesting meme that floats around that says something like, hey, if you take pi and you convert it to octal and then divide it by 2015, you get this date, and this will not happen again for another 623 years. And so... if you missed this one, if you're sad that you missed this Pi Day, even though it is 3.141 5, you will have other numerically interesting days to exist on, probably within the next 6 months.
But probably not an irrational number.
No, probably not.
Yeah, so not as interesting.
Yes.
Okay, and also, as it is on every... non-special Pi Day, and this is a special Pi Day, it is also Einstein's birthday, so happy birthday, Dr. Einstein.
Yes.
Yeah, he would have been an old guy had he lived. What's actually, when did he die? Like in 50-something, right?
In his honor, I watched an Animaniacs episode yesterday from 93 that had the Animaniacs helping Einstein figure out the theory of relativity. Right. I did that yesterday in my homage to Al.
Oh, and one more birthday. Today is the 30th birthday of the first internet domain name, Symbolics.com, which has...
stupid first name. But anyway, why couldn't we have... I understand where it comes from. I know the history, but it'd be nice if we had like...
First.com
or first.com or firstprime.com or...
Number1.com.
One.com. Bigfoamfinger.com. I mean, something like that would have been interesting, but... oh, well.
Okay, now, and here's the thing that... okay, this is kind of a rant day for me, I think. But here's the thing that gets me. Okay, so we've got a unique version of Pi Day, right?
Yes.
Up to, what is this? I'm trying to count now. 5, 9... up to 9 decimal points. We've got Einstein's birthday. We've got the 30th birthday of the very first internet domain name. And what does Google have as its doodle today? Absolutely nothing. There is no Google doodle today. This is really bothering me. But anyway, I think Google really dropped the ball here.
Google is the Google Doodle today.
That's right. That's right.
There is no God but Google.
Okay, and speaking of things that are deified, or maybe not in this case, the Apple Watch. Okay, so we got prices. Boy, do we have prices. My first thought when I saw that was, man, this thing is expensive.
So my first thought was... first of all, dismiss the Apple Watch edition right out of hand as only watch enthusiasts. And there are crazy watch enthusiasts. We think of ourselves as crazy geeks that will make, you know, big expensive purchases for weird reasons. But there are geeks out there that are in different geek worlds. I have a friend who buys, at a time, $150 Lego sets. And he buys 5 or 6 at a time to put them together and add to his giant Lego village. That seems way too pricey for me. There are people who buy watches, you know, 2 or 3 of these really expensive watches regularly. They don't see any problem with it. So, yes, by geek standards, the Apple Watch edition pricing is crazy. So I dismissed that right out of hand. Now, the Apple Watch, the mid-range version...
the stainless steel.
...is a little bit pricier than what I was hoping, mostly because the bands are really... getting the pricing up, the link bracelet, something like $450 by itself. I looked, and for the one I wanted, it would have been around $649. And it made me think, you know, maybe I don't care about stainless steel so much. So I think now when I get my Apple Watch, I'll probably go with the Sport Edition with just a simple black band, because you know that within about 5 minutes of these things getting out in the wild, they're probably already on eBay. There's probably 100 knockoff bands already on eBay that will be flowing in from Asia. So
okay, now this is something we're wondering. Does a watch, regardless of which version it is, does it come with a band by default? I mean, I assume it
looks
does.
Like it has to.
Yeah, you
looking at
to.
The pricing. Yeah.
Yeah. But then you go out and you buy another band if you want
it. Yeah. Yeah. And that's So initially there were weird rumors that I was hearing way back in November, December, that no, you got it with a band and that was the band you got. And they weren't going to have bands for sale. But the Apple website has all the bands listed in the store under accessories. You can buy individual bands. So I think swapping bands is going to be a regular part of life for an Apple Watch user. I just like you could go on eBay or Amazon and get very low-priced cases and such for your iPhone, I have a feeling we're going to see Apple Watch bands that are, you know, $5 for a leather band or a, you know, faux leather band or something like that, that most people I would think would be perfectly happy with.
Well, you know, I agree with you on that, except for one little thing you mentioned in the beginning, that within 5 minutes we'll see knockoff watch bands. I'm not so sure about that. If it follows the model of the phones, for example, when phones come out, there are practically no cases available. You know, and this always bugs me, right? I mean, so I had to go out, and I got the case I got, which is from a company called Joto, J-O-T-O. It's actually pretty good. It's a hard case shell that I got right after I got my iPhone 6 Plus, but it was practically the only case that was available at the time. And fortunately, it met my, you know, my relatively lightweight requirements. You know, I didn't have a lot of things I wanted except a hard shell. But I'm not so sure those bands are going to be available quickly. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. Yep. In April and May, we'll find out how that works. And you know, I'm not even sure watch enthusiasts are going to go after the Apple Watch, because I'm not a watch enthusiast, obviously. But I wonder what it is they look for in something they buy. Is it a collectible thing, like, you know, coin collector, a stamp collector? Is it a fashion accessory, which I probably think not as much. We'll see. What's his name? Kevin Rose, who founded Dig and all that kind of thing, who is a watch enthusiast, says it will appeal to neither the technologist nor the watch enthusiast like himself. So we'll see what happens with the watch edition. And of course, you know, I'm starting the rumor that if you buy a $10,000 watch edition, it will be brought out to you in a showroom floor by a unicorn.
Well, if that happens, I will save up all the money just to see the unicorn.
Just to see the unicorn, right?
Yeah, to hang out.
Yeah, that's worth it. Hey, I also read or heard, I think might have been on MacBreak Weekly, that the Watch Edition will only be available at select Apple stores. So you can't even buy it at, you know, some random Apple store that may be near you.
Well, I think the thing that we're not fully comprehending as tech geeks is that the Watch Edition is not for normal people. Consumption. It is not even for normal rich people. It is for a very specific group of people who want to be seen as the high-tech, fashion-conscious person. And this is not going to be, even if you're making $200,000, $300,000 a year, the kind of watch that you go, yeah, I think I'm going to buy that. It's going to be you're making $2 or $3 million a year and you want a status symbol. And yeah, that's why it's limited editions. That's why it's only at certain Apple stores. It is your way as a multimillionaire to show off that you love Apple.
I guess so. Although, you know, I have to tell you this story. I stopped in at a Costco gas station on the way to visit my mom last weekend. And, you know, there wasn't much of a line. So I pulled up and I'm kind of waiting for a few minutes. But the car in front of me is the story. The car in front of me was a Maserati. And I'm sitting there, you know, in my little El Cheapo, very old car, and I'm looking at this Maserati in front of me getting cheap gas in Costco, thinking, now, why would a person who can afford a Maserati worry about the price of gas, or worry enough about it, or be concerned enough about it to actually pull into a Costco versus, you know, any of the other gas stations that are around the area? And there are lots. It wasn't like, you know, it was in the middle of the desert or something. And I couldn't figure it out until I noticed that when I came back home and I looked up the model he had, it was a low-end Maserati. You know, it was a $250,000 uh-huh. version. So it was not the high-end, so maybe he was a budget-conscious Maserati only. But that's the only thing I can figure out.
See, as a psychologist, I look at that and I decide I could overanalyze this quite well. But I'm just going to assume that he needed gas and that Costco was the nearest place to pull in, or he needed something in Costco, or he has a friend who works at the Costco. I don't know, but Law of parsimony, my friend. I think the simplest explanation, not that he is some strange hybrid Maserati-driving, budget-conscious individual.
Right. Now, having said that, by the way, speaking of ultra-rich people, after looking up, talking to some friends about this, and I did a little search on my phone, and I found that Warren Buffett, who in various times has been the richest man in the world, and or at least in the top five, up until last year, he was driving a 2006 Cadillac DeVille, I think, which is, I guess, a high-end Cadillac. But, you know, again, this is not a car that's in the Maserati or you know, one of those kind of classes of cars. And then he bought another one, a 2014 last year. So, you know, a billionaire, not even a millionaire, a billionaire buys...
As someone who owns a Cadillac, I perfectly understand that. Yeah. I don't drive my Cadillac that often, unfortunately.
But, I mean, you know, it's not an unusual car, you know what I mean? You see it on the road, you think, well, nice car, big car, you know, and then you go on your merry way. But Maserati kind of stands out. Okay, speaking of hating rich people.
Okay. So, Todd, are you going to buy an Apple Watch?
Not at this time.
Need I bring up Sun Tzu Watch?
Yes, I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, beloved. This is a chance to have an integrated watch that will integrate tightly with your iPhone.
Yeah.
So why the hate? Why the hate?
Well, I'm not sure I hate it. You know, I've always liked the idea of a smartwatch. Obviously, as a Sun Tzu owner, I think I used my Sun Tzu for, I want to say 7 years, you know, until Microsoft turned off the spot service in 2011 or 2012, whenever it was. So I liked the idea. I was very much looking forward to the Apple Watch, having passed by the Pebble, passed by the Android Wear devices, and, you know, all the various Samsung watches based on Android or Tizen, whatever it's running. And Microsoft Band, of course. I bypassed them all. And I kind of knew that the Apple Watch was $350, and I you know, the low-end model. And I had kind of budgeted myself to go buy one. But the more I thought about it, I said, wait a minute. I have never spent more than $125 on a watch in my life. And that was for the Sun Tzu, I think, or whatever it costs.
Now, you see, I'm seeing the Sun Tzu, at least when it came out, was around $200.
Okay, I must have gotten it at a discount, because I don't remember paying more than
$150. You may have, because I remember that the Sun Tzu, I had the Fossils, smartwatch.
Yeah.
That was the El Cheapo. I was always very impressed by your Sun Tzu.
Yeah, I had the N3, and I got it at a really good price, which is why I got it, because I don't think I would have paid $200, to be honest. Yeah, I think $150 was kind of my threshold. And that's the nicest watch I've ever owned. It's the only watch I've ever owned more than $100, I think.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, and it lasted 7 years, so I got my money's worth. I feel like I got a good value out of it. I got good usage out of it until Microsoft turned off the service. But with this thing, you know, it's $350 to start with. That's if I don't go with any fancy bands, you know, wristbands and things.
But it also has two-way communication, which your Sun Tzu did not have.
It has much more functionality, much more functions than my Sun Tzu did. And I know it's going to be obsolete next year. You know, that was one of the things of Spotwatch, because Microsoft did nothing with it. It never really became obsolete, because it was sort of the last of its line as soon as it came out.
Well, and we have no idea, though, what Apple's plans are with the... with the Apple Watch. You know, we assume it's going to be a yearly refresh cycle.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, all the watch is not doing the heavy lifting. The watch is doing the receiving from the iPhone, which is doing the heavy lifting. So
for now.
Yeah, processor-wise, I don't really know what we're going to see as major upgrades to the watch.
Well, one thing we can assume, we know that it doesn't actually run, like you said, it doesn't really run apps itself out of the gate. But apparently it's supposed to have its own apps, you know, sometime in the next year or so.
Yeah. So, but I'll be very, I mean, what could you add to it? You could add a FaceTime camera, but then we're going to end up like Penny from Inspector Gadget trying to put our watches in front of our faces, and that doesn't work out too well. You could add more storage, but it kind of seems like the storage specs I saw, I don't really know what more I want out of my watch. I mean, do I really need 8 gigabytes of my music on my watch when my phone will probably be near me most of the time I'm using my watch? Yeah. Or
Well, first, you know, I'm older than you, so I remember Dick Tracy. And the dream of many people my age was to have a Dick Tracy watch with two-way communication, video communication. So that might actually be appealing to some people.
The audio communication, I think, gets me close enough to Dick Tracy. You know, it was very funny. Yesterday, I realized just how weird continuity has gotten with Apple products. I was lying in bed watching something on my iPad mini with headphones in, and my mother called. And my phone was, you know, not out of reach, but kind of farther away. Yeah. But of course, it pops up on the iPad mini screen. Right. So I hit accept, and I talked to her, and then, you know, finished the call. And I thought, wow, I didn't even have to move more than like an inch to take that phone call. Man, Apple is really, you know, with all their encouragement of the active lifestyle, they are promoting sedentary interactions with each other quite easily these days.
That's right. That's right. Much like, what was that? Was it a Disney movie, a Pixar movie, with that little robot? I can't think of its name now.
Wall-E.
Huh?
Wall-E.
Wall-E, right. Which actually used a Mac bong, as you might remember, for its sound.
Yeah.
And remember, all the humans in that movie were, you know, they stopped moving around. They floated on chairs to move from place to place. That's us.
Yeah. That's why Apple invented a watch that tells you to get up and walk around. They've seen what they've been doing to the human race. But no, going back to the Apple Watch, I was excited about it when it was announced.
Yeah.
Of course, I was excited about it in 2012 when it was rumored first.
Right.
And then, yes, I agree that the keynote to this week really had no overwhelming, wow, that is so cool, because it's all the stuff that we saw. Except the pricing. The pricing was the only really new thing.
Right.
So I am just kind of, I'm confused. Why the hate? Why all of a sudden all of my friends who are normally first adopters are going, yeah, I hate this thing. It's a piece of junk. When, you know, we haven't really seen any real world reviews. And the first adopters usually, you know, the whole idea it might be a piece of junk doesn't usually scare away first adopters.
Well, you know, a couple of things, a couple of thoughts. First of all, one, I thought the first iPod was a bad idea, too expensive, too. And, you know, so I thought, oh, this thing will never work. I was wrong on that. The first iPhone, which, as you remember, was sold without any subsidies.
And without apps.
And without apps, I thought was, well, first, it's appless, and it's too expensive, and this thing, and Apple, what does Apple know about phones?
Yeah.
And so I said, well, this thing isn't going to sell either. So my track record in predicting Apple success.
How did you feel about the iPad?
Now, the iPad I loved.
Okay.
Yeah, I bought it, you know, as soon as...
You're one for three.
Pre-order. And I took it to work and things like that. And nobody could figure out what the heck it was. And I said, no, you don't understand. This thing is great. This is what I've been waiting for my whole life.
It did take me a good 6 months to figure out how to integrate an iPad into my daily life.
Oh no, I knew it was what I wanted the moment I heard about it. And so that was the only thing I ever got right in that release, I think. But that said, you know, so I always take a while to warm up to Apple products. So for example, I did not get an iPhone until the 3G.
I didn't get an iPhone as my daily driver until the 5, so you warmed up quicker than me.
Of course,
I was on the only carrier that wouldn't have it until the 5.
And I didn't get an iPod until a Nano came out, which, as you might recall, was, I think, about $200. It was much more affordable than the original iPod and much more pocketable and, you know, all those kind of good things. So it really had an appeal for me. And, well, we'll see. You know, we'll see if the Apple Watch 2, whatever that is, grows me. But like you said, it might not be an annual thing. Some people have been saying, I've been hearing, maybe it'll be released every other year. Or it might be like the Apple TV, where you simply have no idea when they're going to come out with a new one. What, Apple 3 has gone with 3 revisions now, and I don't know how many years?
Speaking of the interesting stuff that did happen at the Spring Forward event.
Yeah.
Of course, the MacBook, the new MacBook, looks really awesome.
Yep. You know, not Pro, just MacBook.
But it's a very pretty device. Yep. I almost picked it up. I didn't, just because I'm not ready to switch over all my adapters and everything quite yet to USB-C.
Especially since you can't find it.
Yeah, exactly. So I just bought a new MacBook, placed an order for it yesterday. It will be the Pro. So I will at least have, for probably the next 4 or 5 years, an older style MacBook. But the other thing that kind of slipped through was the changing of the Apple TV pricing down to $69 instead of $99. So that's starting to bring it down more into the range of like the Amazon Fire TV box and the Rokus, which I think is a good thing, because I think the Apple TV has been a product that we've overlooked for a while. But it really does tie a lot of things. I know at least in my home entertainment environment, it ties a lot of cool stuff together because it allows AirPlay mirroring and direct feeds off of my iTunes libraries and things like that.
By the way, I should note that when I was at Costco the other day, after the Apple event where they announced the lower Apple TV price, I think I saw the Roku 3 XS or whatever the top of the line Roku is for about $69 also. Uh-huh. So apparently Roku, or I don't know if it was Roku or Costco, but somebody has decided to lower that price point recently to at least come close, or if not match, the Apple TV price. So that's kind of interesting that everything's dropping down to that level.
Yeah. I think the writing's on the wall. If you can get people to use their content on larger devices, they probably buy more content.
Yeah, yeah. And that's for sure. I mean, certainly the, especially Amazon's Fire TV Stick, their low-end device, which I think is $40, is a, you know, is a very good competitor to the, you know, formerly $100 Apple TV.
Yeah,
it does pretty much everything except the iTunes stuff, you know.
So it's interesting to see how these things are going. The other last thought I had on Apple Watch that I'm curious your take on is the comparisons that I've seen kind of people drawing between the Microsoft Band.
Yeah.
The Moto 360 and the Apple Watch. Even though all three of these tie into different ecosystems, the Microsoft Band you can use with limited functionality on Android and iOS.
Right.
The Apple Watch is obviously iOS only.
Right.
The Moto 360 is Android only. So I'm curious what your thoughts are. Is it appropriate to make comparisons across those three and say one out of those three is better, when in reality it really depends on what device you're using? Or should we just treat them as maybe the flagships for those three devices, for the wearable for those devices?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I'll add one more thing. There's also the Samsung-only Samsung wristbands that only work with Samsung phones, and only certain models, if that's at least it was when they were released.
Yeah, I usually refer to those as the pieces of crap, but Samsung, you know, we talk about Apple not really knowing what they're doing in the watch market. Samsung has proven they don't know what they're doing in the watch market.
Yeah, to answer your question, though, I think it is, I don't know if it's fair, but I think it's inevitable because they all kind of look alike, you know, they all kind of look like wristwatches. So, you know, it's like, well, you know, is my Ford Fiesta the same as a Maserati? Not really. but you know, it's a lot.
They both fill up at Costco.
That's right.
Both, the same gas that's good enough for one is good enough for the other.
So you know, you're going to make comparisons. Is that a better car? Well, it's more expensive. You know, but is it better? Probably not for me because I couldn't afford it. But in any case, I think it's inevitable we're going to make these comparisons. And, you know, it might be the case where people might choose their phones based on what kind of watch they want, you know, if it becomes an important thing. And so far it hasn't, right? I mean, we haven't really seen multi-millions of smartwatch sales. I think what the most successful is probably the Pebble or the Moto with a million sales.
Yeah, Pebble, I would say.
Yeah. So
now, Pebble, we haven't even talked about the coup they pulled by throwing their latest product on Kickstarter just to get all the Kickstarter stats again.
Yeah.
That was kind of interesting. Like, I'll be interested to see how the Pebble works, just because I've used the Pebble for 2 years now, but the integration with Pebble on iOS is not that great.
How is it on Android?
Well, on Android, it's great. On Android, with the looser restrictions on apps, you have actionable notifications and things like that. Right now, my Pebble can just show me what's going on. I can't dismiss things. I can't archive things. I can't do quick replies. So it's... The Pebble, it's a cool product, and I think that it will go quite a ways for Android users, but I don't know how successful they're going to be after the Apple Watch launches with iOS.
Okay, so here's my I don't want to call it a prediction, but here's my guess. When the first iPhone came out, it kind of kick-started the whole smartphone revolution. There were smartphones before, right? I mean, there was the Palm Trios, there were the Blackberries, there was even Windows Phone, which was quite a seller in its market share-wise in its time. Uh-huh. But it wasn't until the Apple that people, regular people, non-geeks, took notice of the of that category and took a real enough of an interest to actually buy something. That said, once Google got its Android gear in gear, not the Samsung gear, but once Google got its Android phone into high gear, and it did take a while because the G1 was just a terrible device. Well, at least battery-wise, it was terrible. Otherwise, I kind of liked it. But
yeah.
Once Android got into high gear, it overtook Apple iPhone in terms of market share and share numbers. Profit-wise, not so much. I mean, and Samsung apparently is in trouble, but maybe for other reasons. So I think perhaps the Apple Watch may be the best seller for a while. Certainly this year. Uh-huh. I think it'll probably be the best-selling smartwatch. But because it's limited to the relatively smaller iPhone market share, it will fall to second place to something later on. I don't know what that something is. It could be Android Gear-based watches like the Moto 360. You know, or some version of it that comes out that rethinks it and takes better advantage of the Android environment, like you say, because it has fewer limitations than the iPhone than iOS. It might be even Microsoft, who more and more has become multi-platform in many, many ways. You know, we also saw that this week it wasn't Microsoft, it was Nokia. Nokia released here for iPhone, which was I thought was kind of interesting. And uh-huh. Android. And I think Microsoft actually released a couple of things too. I'm forgetting what they released for iPhone and Android. But I know they upgraded Outlook about a month ago. I think OneNote got an upgrade for non-Microsoft platforms. So they've been doing a lot to make their software more available to other places. So maybe the Microsoft Band is, you know, in its number two version two. We'll have more Android and iPhone friendly, so we'll have to wait and see on that. And at $200, you know, basically becomes half the price if you get one of the fancy bands, and it might be much more attractive to some people. We'll have to wait and see on that.
The only thing that I don't see changing anytime soon, because it's a thing that Apple has a lock on, and yeah. they're not going to open it, is that right now the biggest problem I have with my Pebble is stability in terms of maintaining a connection and getting notifications pushed. This means that every so often I have to open the app so that the Bluetooth LE connection gets reestablished. It's just basically those little stability things that, because Pebble is running on top of iOS, it doesn't have access to any of the internal APIs that Apple holds dear,
right?
It has to play by those rules. The Apple Watch, I read something this week that says, yeah, it uses Bluetooth, but it also uses Wi-Fi. It will maintain, I would assume, a much stronger connection to the iPhone because it's baked into iOS.
Yeah.
And so if you're a user who says, I just need the thing to work. I don't really care about who makes it, how much it costs, but when I get a notification, it better show up on my wrist. You're going to look at the Microsoft Band and go, it's a third party. It might not always follow suit. The Pebble, well, if you're me, you already know that it doesn't always work. But the Apple Watch, I'm pretty sure will always work just because it has the deeper connection.
Yeah. By the way, you just brought something to mind. You know, people have been talking about the battery life of the Apple Watch, which is about 18 hours with, you know, 45 minutes of active use and blah, 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 certain other parameters. But, you know, when you were mentioning that, you know, it talks either Bluetooth or Wi-Fi to the iPhone, I wonder what kind of effect that has on the iPhone's battery life.
You know, that's a good question.
Does it cut it by 1%, 10%? You know, probably not more than 10%. But still, it's got to have some impact on the battery life if it's always pinging the iPhone.
iOS has weird battery life, though, as we've all figured out who've had iPhones. You know, this morning I took it off charge, went over, doing a little dog sitting this weekend, so I picked it up. I drove over to let the dogs out. Used it for about 5 minutes, it seemed, and I was down to 84% after I charged all night. And then got home, charged it again, and now after it charged up again, it's down to only like 94%.
Wow.
So even though we've come a long way with battery life on iPhone,
yeah,
we really don't know what the effect's going to be. It could be great. It could be 1%, or it could be 20-30%.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we should bring our friends Jack and Sven back on in a couple of weeks maybe and have them give their views of, you know, since they're Microsoft Band users, I think both of them use Microsoft Band, what their thoughts are. And they do look at other platforms. It's not like they ignore other platforms. So we'll see what their views are as Microsoft Band enthusiasts.
We should, when I get the Apple Watch and they have the Band, and Todd, you as your homework, you have to go buy a Pebble.
Okay.
And, you know, play with that. You should be able to get a decent Pebble now at Costco, like an 80-pack on a unicorn for, you know, $30 or something like that.
Actually, Pebble is at Sam's Club for $100 now. The original, yeah. Not the steel.
So we should really have a discussion after.
Yeah.
I would just say we should have a discussion after we have actual usage data instead of speculation.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. So maybe not in a few weeks, maybe in late April. No, I mean, you won't even get it late April because you pre-ordered in late April, right? So maybe in May.
You pre-ordered in late April and you get it late April.
Yeah. So maybe in May, sometime in May. Yeah, after you give your students finals or whatever that is, whatever that time is. Some yes. crazy time.
It will be, you mean in the time that I have set aside to have fun.
That's right.
After everything is said and done on the school year, before I start teaching summer classes.
Yeah, I read that little break you have. Okay, so that's, we'll have to wait and see on that. I think I will eventually buy an Apple Watch. I just don't think it's this year. There's just something about it. I just need to learn more about what it how it fits into the rest of the world. And like I said, I'm not an early adapter on Apple products, with the exception of the iPad. Yeah, I have never bought the first of anything. In fact, that's not true. I bought the first Mac Mini, the G4-based Mac Mini. So that's the only other first release I've bought. MacBook Air, I didn't buy it until 2010 when it got good, as I say. The first MacBook Air was not good.
That's even better than me. I didn't buy it until 2011 when it got even better.
Yeah, and Apple TV, I didn't buy it until it shrank down and lost the ability to record.
So, yeah.
But that was better for me. It went from, $350 to $100, and it was just a much more reasonable device. So that's kind of my, I guess that's kind of my historical trend with Apple products. I always kind of wait for the next version that seems to fit me a little bit better, or a lot better in many cases.
Well, the only Apple product that I bought day one, the first release, was the iPad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will be curious to see how the watch goes. I will pre-order it on April 10th, and we will discuss it. And my Pebble will hopefully not be too angry, because I think it will be retired back to its watch box for a while. But
hey, you know, I have the square version of the iPod Nano. I could put that in a watch band and...
Oh, yeah, you could. Yeah, about how big or how different that is compared to everything else.
And technically, I could call that my Apple Watch.
You could.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to think about that. So one last thing I see you have in our list of things to talk about is... I don't even know if I want to talk about this. This is so terrible. You talk about it.
So... Oracle, our good friends Oracle.
Yeah.
Who make the most
killers popular, of my favorite products.
Well, yes, but they also make the most popular and profitable database software on the planet.
To be sure.
They happen to also own Java.
Yep.
And for many, many years have bundled crapware, a.k.a. things you don't need, a.k.a. the Ask.com toolbar, because I don't know about you, Tom, but I visit Ask.com at least once a millennia.
Yeah.
Once a historic Pi Day or so.
And then that would be by accident, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I meant to type in ack.com or something like that. But they bundled it on Windows for many, many years, and now they're going to start bundling it, or they already have started bundling it, on the Mac installer for Java. Now, the interesting thing I've always noticed about Mac installers is that typically crapware doesn't get bundled in because either A, crapware isn't available for it.
Right.
Or B, I've long suspected that the people who are tasked with putting together the Mac installers are Mac users.
Yeah.
And thus they don't care what corporate says, and they just make it not the default to install. I have an HP printer over here that it's hilarious to me that when I install it on Windows, it installs a bunch of crapware. But when I install it on Mac, all the crapware is unchecked. It's available, but it's not checked by default, which is kind of interesting. So I am just I am just baffled. I don't know how Oracle is hurting so badly that even my birds are really upset about it.
Yeah, I can hear that.
You know, they run Java on their little mirror boxes over there, whatever they have. Yep. But anyway, I don't understand why the ask.com toolbar even exists in the Windows version of Java. How badly is Oracle hurting for money that they're getting the commissions, and that's, you know, is that really floating their bottom line? And why, with Mac users, would you even think that you're going to have any kind of critical number that is going to start, you know, also contributing to this bottom line? It just seems like a really bad PR move. And my personal belief is that it's tied into some middle manager's bonus at the end of the year, and so he's pushed it forward, but Oracle doesn't really care. I don't know. It's just, it's depressing. It is very, very depressing when you see big companies, profitable companies, doing crap like this.
Right. And for all we know, they're adding Superfish, too.
Yeah, no, they probably are. It's now Oracle Quadruple Fish. It is, you know, four times the superness that it was before.
Yeah, I know when I read that, you know, I started out, I went to the very first Java once. I was a proponent of Java from Java 1.
And I remember playing Borland J Builder and building Java apps back in 97.
And I remember thinking this was going to solve so many problems for me as a person who needed to develop for, at the time, Windows and Unix boxes. And it really didn't. I mean, I solved a lot of problems for other people, but for me, it was like, who thought of this library? And who decided I was going to do garbage cleanup right now when I don't wanted to do it?
One of the things that the only time I've used Java extensively in the last years is developing Android apps.
Yeah.
And it's still just as annoying, even though it's supposedly matured over 15 years, 20 years.
Yeah, 20 years now, actually. Yeah. So, but this, you know, I've been uninstalling Java on machines that don't need it. And basically, only machines that needs Java are, I think I have one that runs processing.org, which is kind of a cool language that Arduino uses. I forget, I think there's a name for the Arduino version. But at any rate, I've been removing Java and Flash and things like that off of various machines. And even Chrome, by the way, because Google Chrome is just a processor and memory hog. Off of machines that simply don't need it. And this is just one more reason not to install Java for me.
It is really just depressing to me that we've gotten to this point where, you know, crapware just has become such a standard business practice. We talked about it last week or the week before with Superfish.
Superfish, yeah.
It makes me sad.
It does, and on a happier note, I'm trying to find a happier note. Oh, okay.
Apple Watch is finally coming out. That's a happier note for me.
I don't want to end a podcast on a down note if I don't have to, so I will say this. Google Calendar is available for iOS. The Google Calendar app is available for iOS. Oh, yeah. It's kind of neat looking. I'm not sure I'm going to switch from Apple's default calendar app. I have already, by the way, done away with... Oh, what was the other thing I was using? I can't even remember its name anymore. Anyway, I was using some other calendar thing, and it was just driving me bonky, so I stopped using it after many, many months of use, actually. So there is that. So there's the if you are interested, there is a Google Calendar app for iPhone. It's kind of neat. As I said, I'm not sure I'm going to replace the default Apple app, but it is, I think, worth taking a look at. And also, as I mentioned earlier, Nokia Here Maps, which does offline maps better than Google Maps, I think, is available for iOS. So that's kind of neat. And I'm just kind of looking through what things I may have installed the last couple of days. And I think that's it. What is this storm? Who does this? Oh, Weather Underground released yet another weather app a couple of weeks ago called Storm. And that looks kind of interesting, too. I haven't really used it much because we've had pretty nice weather here. But, okay, so three apps. Weather Underground, Storm, Nokia Here, which is not part of Microsoft, it's a part that Microsoft did not buy, and Google Calendar, aka Skynet. So, three apps for your iPhone. Anything for Android?
I'm trying to think of anything. I can't think of anything. Come out that I've heard of in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I can't think of anything offhand.
Really, just bringing the parody. I like that Google still, you know, cares about iOS with the Google Calendar app.
Yep.
Yeah, there are some neat things rolling out, and I think we're coming into the summer app season, if there is such a thing, that does seem to bring out whatever is going to be the cool new apps among the kids, as they call it, tends to come out in summer when kids have more time to play with apps. Yeah. So we'll hopefully see some cool stuff rolling out over the next couple of months.
And speaking of apps for the summer, there's one you're going to get that I'm not. There is a hidden app on our iPhones.
Yes.
For the watch, but it only appears apparently if you activate or you pair a watch with your iPhone. So I will never see it, at least this calendar year. But you will, and I'm hoping you will show me and share with me what it actually does when you are able to
activate I will tell all about the Apple Watch when I get it.
All righty. So that ends Mobile Views Podcast 111. That's not binary.
No, that is decimal 111.
On the once in 100 years version of Pi Day, which is up to, and again, I'm counting, 9 decimal places. After this, we'll be back to 2 decimal place Pi Days, which is not quite as special.
No, but we'll still enjoy them. They'll still exist. We'll be happy with them.
We'll still have pie. We'll always have pie.
Yes, exactly. And just in case we care, 111 in binary would be 110111, and in octal would be 157. So this is Octal Podcast 157.
Very good. Thank you. Mobile Views Podcast, Pi Day. Talk to you next time.